Welcome to the HCC Wrestling Inside Pulse, Wrestling Pulsecast. I'm your host, as usual, Matthew Herrick, joined again with Justin and Cam from HCC.com and InsidePulse.com, and also joined with our special guest for this week. But before I get to our special guest, I want to let everybody know, as you probably figured out from the opening theme music, we're into WrestleMania season. It's been WrestleMania season for the WWE since Royal Rumble. We couldn't pull off a WrestleMania season that long. So we decided to go Elimination Chamber on. I know I don't have anything to talk about for Elimination Chamber, so we could just kind of blow by that. And I haven't really been able to watch the network, so we can kind of sit by that. We can get right into our top three, which is what our theme is going to be for the next, I think it's four or five weeks, something of that nature. Every single week, we're going to be doing a top three WrestleMania-themed show with a special guest. We have people coming up that have been on the show before. We have people that haven't been on the show before. We have people who were in the other show and then couldn't be on the show, which, Rob, remind me to have you give Jill Thompson a call because she's not responding to my messages, even though she said she's going to be on next week. So, and if you do pick up on that little connection, our special guest this week is the one and only Rob Schamberger, who, since day one, has gone from little independent artist who showcased his stuff in the Kansas City market to having his own homepage on WWE.com. I don't know, Rob, were we one of the first shows that you came on to talk about this project, or are we kind of in the middle here?
Definitely one of the coolest.
Okay, I can live with that. what I really truly learned from our show is you just telling me that it came off sounding like I knew at least something about art compared to the other shows that you've been on, and I took that as a great compliment because it was like, hey, somebody did their homework.
No, it was great. Like, I've done other interviews since where, you know, about halfway through the guy's like, yeah, I'm actually not really familiar with what you do, so anything you want to talk about, just go ahead.
Wow. That is
terrible. So, you kind of spoiled me at the beginning there.
Like, I don't do this for a living, but oh dear God, that's awful. But, since I wanted to get into it, you've blown up over the last year. You really hit your stride. I can't really say hit your stride, but really it hit the mother load at the end of 2013. With WWE, well, personally, let's just get right into it. Did they approach you to come on to put your stuff up for auction at WWE.com? Or, like, how did that really
come to me.
Come together?
Yeah, they came to me. Jim Ross had passed my information along to them. So I'm actually like the last person that Jim brought into WWE. So that's probably what got him canned. Jim was, he's been super supportive for a couple of years now, and, you know, just, the stars aligned and it felt like the right time for everyone involved. And yeah, pretty cool. There's some neat stuff coming up too.
Well, I saw too that it kind of exploded right after the Triple H champion's portrait. Did he contact you in any personal way, or was it through that Twitter exchange, or have you spoken to him since then? It seemed like he really was a fan of your work and some of the older champions that you've done over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I strangely have not spoken with him directly yet. The guy that I work with at WWE, like, told me this really cool thing. Like, they had a department head meeting about my art. And, like, you know, they had, like, slides and they had, like, little examples that they had printed out there. And I guess, like, Triple H was just all about it and all in on stuff and was already familiar with my work. It such a strange experience to have, but a neat one.
Yeah, isn't it weird that you're talking to somebody and they already know stuff you've done? Obviously, I'm on a much smaller scale, but for you to have people just be like, oh, yeah, I know who you are. I've been watching and listening to your stuff for years now. I mean, it's got to be a surreal experience to go from, like I said, doing the, I believe it was, is it Metro Pro Wrestling out in Kansas City? And going from that to the international.com, where it seems like every week they're putting up a new signed portrait of somebody. Has it been more demanding on you, or are these more a reprint of ones you've done in the past?
Well, they came through Kansas City here a few weeks ago for a house show. And we arranged for me to go backstage with a whole bunch of those paintings. They gave me a list of everyone that was going to be on the show. And so we got to get all those signed at once. And, you know, all the guys had their pictures taken with the pieces, except mm-hmm. for the Shield. They were mysterious. Like, you turn around and they were just signed. You know, I guess they came in through the crowd or something. Like, my handler there was unfamiliar with my work, you know, because he's the guy that's just on the road all the time.
Right.
He doesn't have a lot of time to fiddle fart around with other stuff. And he, you know, just like, okay, is this guy the corporate said is coming in to get stuff signed for auction? Okay. And then, like, all the wrestlers were really excited to meet me. And, like, several of them already have stuff hanging up in their houses, or it's their Twitter profile picture, or, you know, whatever. And he's like, wow, you're, like, they all know who you are. I'm like, yeah, dude, get the memo. And it was really neat. Like, Mark Henry put me in a big bear hug and, like, just, like, you know, eyeballed me, right? And he's like, you need to have a nice big picture of me ready by WrestleMania, or next time we come through town, I'm going to destroy your studio.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, so do I do it or not? Because then I've got that awesome story of him destroying my studio.
They should just set up cameras everywhere, start selling it online. It's like, once Mark Henry retires or whatever. It's like, here it is, part of the shoot video. It's him going nuts. I don't know what happened. But, it's been great. I've been watching a couple of them go through, and it's been interesting to see. Like, I always see your stuff pop up, and I know Edge used your photo for Twitter handle for, I think, a long time, if it's not still. But I know he had his yours up for a very long time. And the best thing, the only thing I can relate it to is I do the desktop wallpapers, which do not take nearly the skill or any talent compared to what you do. But James Storm used mine for like a year, and it was something. I was like, holy shit, where the hell did he see this? And how did he get it up there and just threw it up there? But because it wasn't like I send this stuff out. It was just there one day when I was reading the timeline. So I got a little piece of what you get to experience. Gotta ask, has anybody requested a Ryback portrait yet?
Even he was surprised that I had done one.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But that one actually went on auction last week, and that's a pretty good price. Like, you know, performed a lot better than I'd anticipated. I think the buyer was international too, if I remember right.
I have found international is much more open to putting up money for wrestling products that they don't see very often, because even our website does pretty good international numbers, and it's great. I love it. I love the fact that this actually translates all over the world. I mean, just something like that. I told you I have three of your three, four. I have three up in my office, and then I have your Macho Man Elizabeth upstairs with framed with my WrestleMania 30 ticket. And it's like something like that. It's amazing that this stuff can go anywhere now. It's all you have to do is just a click of a button, and anybody across the world can get it or see it or find it or do whatever they want. And it's awesome for you, for a guy who, I remember when we were first talking, you found your niche and you realized, hey, doing wrestling stuff is fun, and I get to do different things that I like to do, and it's actually paying off, and it's really paying off for you now. I mean, going from that Kickstarter campaign to WWE.com, I'd say that's a pretty good career growth. There's that was the last question I had for you. How high has your prices jumped for your CM Punk or Daniel Bryan pieces?
Yeah, the Bryan stuff's performing pretty well. We had one of those up on auction last week and did really well. I think it ended up going the highest, but like through most of the auction, the Natalya one was outperforming him, which was pretty fun.
Wow.
But yeah, and then the Punk stuff, you know, just waiting to see what's going on there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there's people that know exactly what's happening there, but I am not one of them. So I'm just waiting to find out.
I don't think anybody knows except maybe two or three people. But just so other people know, it's not just WWE auction site that could buy your stuff on. You can still get prints off your website, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
I just wanted to throw that out there because I don't want people automatically thinking, oh, I have to go to WWE.com in order and place a bid on these things. If you do want an actual print of Rob's, you can go to it's just Rob Schamberger.com, right?
Right. Robschamberger.com. I have the best last name for podcasts and radio.
I know it's very easy, and now anytime I go to punch it in because we correspond so much, anytime I start spelling your name, it automatically fills it out for me. So I'm like, oh, that was nice. anyway, let's get into it. We have we started doing for the past couple of years. We've done top five, and we've run so far over our time limits that it became ridiculous. We had. Our good friend Rob Karpolis, who was on the WWE creative team, who now runs WWE creative-ish Twitter handle that I'm sure many of you read during pay-per-views and during Raw. We had him doing our year-end show where we had our year-end awards. We did episode one. We knew we were probably going to have to get two episodes out of it. And we did episode two, and episode two went so long, Blog Talk Radio cut us off and just hung up on everybody. So we decided, you know what, five is just too much. Granted, we were doing much more than five when we were having our year-end awards. But we decided to cut down to three. We'll be able to talk about things a little bit more, and maybe we won't have as many repeats as usual. And as I said before, this is our WrestleMania-themed stack of shows that we have going on. And this week we have the top five opening matches in WrestleMania history. So these matches have to be the very first match on the card. Now, I'm not counting free-for-all matches when they were doing the free-for-all matches. I'm not counting kickoff matches or dark matches and things like that. Those are not really considered the opening match. I'm talking about after all the pyro goes off, after you see the opening video package about who the main event is. These are the people that get the show started off and hopefully started off on the right foot. There's 29 years of WrestleMania that we were able to go through. And that's why I thought this was a great topic for us to look at, because there's been a lot of matches featuring very high-profile and highly successful men who started out just opening WrestleMania. And it's one of those things where it can go by taste. You can go with somebody like the Executioner versus Tito Santana for WrestleMania 1, simply because that was WrestleMania 1. Or you can go with one of the Money in the Bank matches, because they opened WrestleMania a few years in a row. So it's going to be a very widespread. And considering there's four of us, hopefully we don't have any repeats. But who knows? We'll see what happens. I know Justin and Cam are just sitting back listening right now, and they're going to sit back and listen for a little bit longer, because as per our usual tendency, our guests go first, and Rob, you get to start us off with your number three of your top three opening WrestleMania matches.
Number three. Can I go ahead and throw out 5 and 4 also?
If you wish, yes, if you want to. Do you want to just
okay.
throw in those
I'll
honorable
just
mentions?
List them off real quick. I don't have to go in deep on them. For five, I had JBL and Finley from 24. Mostly for sentimental reasons, because I was there. And that's the only sentimental one I allowed myself on the list. And then four, last year's Shield against Orton, Sheamus, and Show. Kind of felt like a passing of the torch, but it was also just a good match. So number three would be Shawn Michaels against Tatanka at WrestleMania 9. Out of Shawn's opening matches, I felt like that was his strongest. And he really worked well with Tatanka there. Like, they were both, like, really in prime shape and put on a good, solid match with story behind it. And looking at it here, it looks like it ran about 18 minutes. That was a good one to really set the energy right for the whole show.
Yeah, and it was one of those where it was a show that was taking place outside, so you really didn't know what to expect as far as that goes, because this was the first time WrestleMania was going to be outside. And also, luckily enough, that it was just windy, and it wasn't pouring rain or anything like that, like we got at WrestleMania 29. But it was also Shawn Michaels' first title defense at WrestleMania. He never won the tag team championship as the Rockers, and he was coming into this match as the IC champion against, an undefeated Tatanka. So it was really priming Shawn Michaels up as this serious heel threat that. Kind of that cocky heel threat who is a champion, but is going to win at any cost and keep his title at any cost. And that's what ended up happening. I believe there was a disqualification. Was it a sensational Sherry disqualification? Or it was some way Shawn lost.
It was a
count
out.
Count out, that's right. Because I remember him attacking Mr. Perfect later on in the show, and it just seemed like a weird segue for him, because I don't think it went anywhere. But, I agree with you. I thought that was a great match for Shawn and for Tatanka. I thought they put on a pretty good-length match in an environment that was going to be difficult to predict. I don't know how you could prepare for an outdoor show in Las Vegas with a Roman theme going on. So for them for them to go out there and just kind of like block out all that and do their job, it worked out pretty well. Justin, what do you have to add to any of that?
I guess I would just have to add that if only the fans wish they could have gotten something as good for the rest of the night, because pretty much the rest of that card was, for the most part, forgettable outside of the ending to the WWF title match that night. But everything else about that show kind of just went downhill from there. But, no, yeah, I agree. It's a good match. Like you said, it's easily the best match from the entire card. So, yeah, good choice.
Oh, come on. That was Undertaker's best match ever.
uh, As we all know, that was Undertaker versus Giant Gonzalez, in which that was the only one Undertaker won by disqualification. So awful. And to Justin's point, when I was playing with the WrestleMania, was it 2K14 now, and doing the 30 years of WrestleMania, doing the or having to complete the main event of WrestleMania 9 was just heartbreaking, because it's like, oh, not only do I have to do the hard part, but then I have to come and beat Hogan and screw everything up, and that's just pathetic. But anyway, moving on. Let's go to Cam and get your thoughts on Tatanka and Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 9.
Well, that was actually my number 3, but I'm going to replace it. Yeah, that was a great Undertaker Giant Gonzalez match. I don't know why we don't talk longer about that. I would have moved the – I think I would have moved the – this up higher up on my list if it would have actually had a real legitimate finish. But, yeah, I could count out due to, like, sensational Sherry or whatever it was, kind of ruined the whole vibe, especially since it was such a good match.
Yeah, it was one of those. But I think the overall picture of them being able to set a very good pace for a show that just kind of fell flat as soon as they got to the back. Although that was the Narcissist debut, which, from what I remember, the Lex Luger Mr. Perfect match wasn't that bad. It was a weird feeling seeing those two in the ring together, but it wasn't that bad if memory serves me correctly. But despite that, well, let's move on to somebody else's number 3. I won't hog all the talking time, so I'll throw it over to you, Justin, and let's get your number 3.
My number 3, I am going to put on my list the I'm going to go to WrestleMania 7 with the Rockers taking on the Barbarian and Haku. And my main reason for putting that on the list is, to me, an opening match of any pay-per-view should be a match where you have a somewhat high-octane match where you guys that can get the crowd into it and get the crowd, you know, cheering the whole time. And what better way in the 1990s, early 90s like that, than to go out and put the Rockers out there who are introducing these new high-flying, off-the-top-rope moves in the WWF at the time to the audience they really weren't used to seeing before. And here they are, and they get the, that's actually the last match I watched before I called in here, is watch that match, and they get the crowd into the entire match. You know, it's just the aura of the Rockers at that time was probably the perfect way to get the crowd into that WrestleMania show, outside of Jim Duggan coming out in a ridiculous red, white, blue costume that, and then announcing that match. But, you know, like I said, when I think openers, I want to think of a match that's high octane and gets the crowd into it. And what better way to start a show than to have the Rockers out there performing all the moves that they were performing at the time on that show. And for their part, they're Barbarian and Haku put in a good effort to making them look good with all this stuff. But that is my choice for number 3.
Yeah, you'll see a lot that Shawn Michaels or the Rockers opened a lot of WrestleManias, and I think that's a good reason as to why, is because they were different for the time, and they were the guys that could get the fans a little bit more hyped up before the big heavies came out and lumbered through their match. Rob, do you have anything to add to that one?
Yeah, I enjoyed that match a lot too. Like we were talking about before the show started, just over the last couple of days, watched all these on the network. If I can go a while without hearing America the Beautiful, I'm doing good. But that was one.
You have to watch it for WrestleMania 22, though. I don't want to. You always have to watch it for WrestleMania 22. Well, I say from 22 to 26, I believe, they used my America the Beautiful video package throughout for that whole thing. I was fired because I wasn't good at my job, but they used my video package for that length of time, and I was already working for ESPN while they were still airing it. But anyway, besides that point, go ahead. I just had to throw that in there.
Yeah, and some of those packages were strange. Like, I think it was for 2 with Ray Charles singing. Like, it ends with just, like, a power shot of Hogan. I'm like, wow. Like,
yep.
That's subtle, yep. Like a brick to the head. And then the one that Rock was saying was brutal.
The only note that I ever got for when I did my first cut was it needs more planes. So I can only imagine what the note was when it was just Hulk Hogan was their main attraction. All I could see is just, I mean, my boss at the time was John Kabor, who's with TNA now, big. And it was just, I need to see more planes. And I could just picture Vince going, where's Hogan? Where's Hogan? No, Hogan's got to be it. Where's
we need
Hogan?
More Hogan.
And it's been that
there's nothing more America than Hulk Hogan.
And have you gotten the memo yet that you got to start working on some more Hogan pieces? Because I'm sure they're going to ask you to sign a bunch of those coming up soon.
I've got a few set aside. Just put a new one up on Monday.
There you go.
I thought that was, in my top 10 matches. It definitely had a great energy and it's so fun, knowing what a serious, highly regarded guy Sean became, seeing him there before everything was all put together. That was a lot of fun. But I think maybe that's why I didn't have it as high as his solo match, because he didn't quite have all the pieces there yet.
Right. So I'm going to jump into my number three and not let Cam talk at all. I'm going to jump into my number three just because it parlays off of your response perfectly. And my number three is Shawn Michaels versus Tito Santana at WrestleMania 8. And the reason why this is my number three is because this is Shawn's first singles match at WrestleMania. So this was the first time he was ever allowed to showcase him by himself in a match on the biggest stage, and then eventually become Mr. WrestleMania, which the DVD screener that I got that I'm supposed to be doing a review on, I've been watching, and I was a little bit perturbed because there's only comments from Shawn before all the matches, and then they show the match. It kind of almost seemed like a compilation of just his WrestleMania matches, and that bothered me a little bit. But this match, for everything and for everything he's done for the business and for his nickname being Mr. WrestleMania, this, I feel like, started it all because it was his very first singles match at WrestleMania. And it was a damn good match, too. I put it above the Tatanka match. Well, I think that's just because of the work quality of Tito Santana, and they both had very similar styles that I thought they blended well, even though Shawn was very young into working on his own at that point. Cam, do you want to add anything to that one?
I don't know if you guys are on the network, but Sami Zayn and Cesaro just wrestled their match of the year easily right now, and they just finished right now. But that was a good match. I think that really set up. I actually did buy the Shawn Michaels Mr. WrestleMania DVD, too, and I kind of feel like it is like a best-of compilation. Like I'm buying like a top 10 series or something, so I was kind of a little disappointed. But I don't know if Justin or Rob or you, Matt, or I don't know if Matt, you have the network going on at your house, but this match was insane.
I'm looking forward to watching it.
I don't have it going simply because I'm trying to do a radio show. I think that might be why I don't have it going right now. But Rob, do you have anything to add to Shawn and Tito? I know I picked the one right before your match, but it's Shawn Michaels.
I think it was just one of those subjective things. Of why I picked, Tatanka over, the Santana one. Because, Tito Santana was obviously a much more accomplished wrestler. There were a lot of things in that match that were probably better than they would have been if Shawn had been going against one of those more contemporaries. I think it just came down to subjective on kind of a flip of the coin on why I picked one over the other. but still a very solid, very good match.
Understandable. And Justin?
Yeah, I agree with Cam. I do have this on in the background as I'm doing the show, too, and I agree with him. But about Sami Zayn and Cesaro. But as far as WrestleMania goes, one thing I like to look back on that card, when you look at it, and you look at the first three matches on that show, and it was kind of almost like a changing of the guard right in a row, which is interesting to look back. I'm sure the WWE didn't think twice about this when they laid out their card, but you had three new score kind of guys in Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker, and Bret Hart going over, respectively, Tito Santana, Jake Roberts, and Roddy Piper, three old-school guys in a row. So that's one thing I like to look at WrestleMania 8 when you look back on it. It's just kind of almost like a changing into the new generation right there when you saw those three guys going over the three guys of the old-school kind of guard. And then, you know, those three guys would pretty much be the cornerstones of the WWF going forward into the rest of the early and mid-90s, and even into the late 90s, too.
Even past the late 90s, Undertaker is probably going to headline WrestleMania this year if they don't come up with a better main event than Randy Orton and Batista. But, you make a good point. And that was, I believe, Jake Roberts' last match for the WWF before he went over to WCW for a little while. Just to send this out there into the world, wishing Jake the best in his recovery from his recent surgery to remove, it turned out to be three tumors. One was cancerous behind his knee, and they found two others while doing the surgery. So hopefully Jake is going to recover quickly and get back into form and be able to make it to the Hall of Fame. I mean, the man's finally going into the Hall of Fame, and I can't pick of a better time for him to do it. And the rumor is Diamond Dallas Page is going to be the one inducting him. It's a little weird having a guy who's not in the Hall of Fame or not even really involved with WWE right now inducting him, but he is probably his closest friend at the moment. But just putting that out there, I have spoken with Jake before. We did the interview with him. We did the interview with Dallas, and I just wanted to throw that out there. And hopefully Jake get better soon, and we hope to see you in full health and in full snake mode come WrestleMania time. Moving on, let's move on to number three, but this time down to Cam. I know you said you had Shawn Michaels versus Tonka, but you wanted to change it up. So who do you have moving up to number three?
Yeah. Oh, is Justin in trouble, too, for multitasking while we're doing our radio show?
yes.
My alternative number three is going to be WrestleMania 14. The Legion of Doom wins the 15-team Battle Royal. Simply because I'm just a Battle Royal Rumble like Mark, so anytime that there's a Royal Rumble or Battle Royal outside of the pay-per-view itself, it kind of, you know, gets me going. I know it necessarily probably wasn't, a great way to kick off a WrestleMania, but I still went back and watched it today, and I thought it was overall a pretty good match for it being a tag team Royal Rumble.
All I remember from that match is Sunny coming out in that bikini and that get-up, and I mean, the Road Warriors looked weird, but Sunny looked good. That's all I got to say about that one. Justin?
Yeah, I remember that and the whole, they tried to do the LOD 2000 kind of gimmick, and like you said, with Sunny, and I think they came out in almost like, if I'm trying to remember correctly off the top of my head, they came out in almost goalie match with a whole big giant face shield over the top of their head, which is kind of just funny.
Yep.
Thinking, they're trying to reboot LOD here instead of just sticking with the traditional stuff that worked. But no, I agree with Taylor. I'm also a little bit of a sucker for Battle Royals. So I totally see it putting him on that list. I might have too, but like I said, I'm a big sucker outside of Battle Royals. Outside of Divas Battle Royals, you always end up being probably the worst type of Battle Royal there is. But no, I definitely, I get the Battle Royal thing, so.
Yeah, and Rob?
Sonny looked great. Like, if that was the Sonny that you could pay to cuddle with in bed and get a photo shoot with, I would have had no problem paying the 50.
Yeah, if you had to go back in time in about 10 years. But I get your point.
I thought it was a mess of a match, personally. Like, just watch it today. Just because of the logistics of the tag team aspect, like, it was really hard to pay attention to who's eliminated. And then, you know, like, the partner could, like, still keep going, you know, before he's notified somehow that, hey, you have to get out of here. Like, just from, like, my bizarre, yes, I know I'm talking about wrestling. Yes, I know it's the Undertaker is a wrestling zombie. But sometimes, like, there's, like, a suspension of disbelief that I can't get past. And for some reason, that one just didn't click with me. When I, you know, like, a month from now or 2 months from now, when I think about the match, I won't be thinking about the match. I'll be thinking about, yeah, Sonny's intro, because that was great.
I mean, it doesn't help that I picked up when we were at WrestleCon this past year, I picked up the limited edition Sonny that is dressed as in her LOD gear. So, I just turned around and I was like, oh, that's where it is. That's nice. And then I had a hot pack for the show. But, and I don't know if anybody saw the Instagram or tweets I sent out, but if you're out there and you're a fan of action figures or wrestling memorabilia or anything like that, they released the CM Punk Slam City ice cream bar truck, where he comes with, I guess, The Miz. I haven't opened it. I seriously thought I will open it. But he's dressed like an ice cream man, and he's got pink X's on the back of his ice cream gloves. So just had to throw that out there. That's probably it's a highlight of my collection right now. I'm looking at it. It's so absurd and ridiculous, but awesome at the same time. And it might be the last thing that we see of CM Punk for a while. But moving on, my two cents on the tag team battle royal. I like battle royals too. This is just one of the ones that just seemed like it wanted to get a lot of guys a paycheck, and it worked in the fact that a lot of guys got money out of the deal. But I don't think it really worked to get the night started off right. I think they could have just done maybe a surprise tag match where LOD came back out, reunited or returned or whatever it was, and had just as good of a reaction and probably a better match. But anyway, we're moving on. We've done all our number threes, so let's move on to number two. I'm going to jump down to Justin and get you in there with your number two.
For my number two, I am going to throw out one that I personally attended. It wasn't last year's. It was WrestleMania 27 and Edge against Alberto Del Rio. Little did we know at the time the significance of the match would be later on, considering Edge would go on to retire later on, not even a week later pretty much, from that match. But I remember I was at the WrestleMania, like I said, and nobody knew, like, what was happening. You're all speculating who would go on first. And then all of a sudden you see Ricardo in the ring. And everybody that I was just kind of surrounded by was kind of like, whoa, you know, this is going first. The world title match is going first. Like, the third highest match on the card is going on first, which was something they hadn't really done at WrestleMania to that point. Obviously, they did it the next year at WrestleMania 28 with Daniel Bryan and Sheamus. But it was a good match. It was when, obviously, Edge was a solid ring veteran at the time, and it was at the height of the Alberto Del Rio character. He had just won the Royal Rumble. Pretty much, I think, everybody going into that match thought he was going to come out of it with the world title. I don't really remember too many people thinking Edge was going to retain, because it seemed like he had invested so much into the Alberto Del Rio character. And then, you know, you see Edge retain, which was kind of a big shock to not only me being there. And like I said, everybody around me was kind of shocked to see Edge retain. You know, it was a good match. You know, both of these guys, as much as I know Matt hates Alberto Del Rio, I think he would kind of agree at this point he was still relatively new, he was relatively fresh, he was over still with the crowd. And then it just kind of all went downhill for him from there. Like I kind of brought up last week when we were talking about the Elimination Chamber, that was like the time to give Alberto Del Rio the world title, and they did it. And every other time since then, he was world champion. nobody really cared too much about him because when he was WWE champion, they cared more about CM Punk and Triple H and John Cena and The Rock were tag teaming. Then when he was world champion, everybody wanted Dolph Ziggler to cash in the Money in the Bank contract. So, you know, it was a good in-ring match with, you know, the psychology with everybody with Alberto Del Rio working over the arm of Edge the whole match. And then, you know, Edge was trying to use submission moves of his own. But you look back on it, and while, like I said, I still think it's a good match no matter what, how you look at it. It's just one of those things where you kind of wish they would have capitalized on Alberto Del Rio then, because after that, everything else kind of just went downhill for him. But it was definitely a good choice for the opening match when you look back on it, because, like I said, it got the crowd into it. After the initial shock of, oh, this match is going on first, then everybody kind of got into it then. You had Christian and Brutus Clay playing their parts on the outside. So it was definitely a good match, I guess, to have open on it, looking back after you got over the initial shock.
Yeah, for me, it's one of those, it was on my list, and then it was off my list, and I had to take it off my list simply because the only reason why I had it on was I was at the Raw 2 weeks later when Edge had to announce his retirement, and it honestly it was a very it sounds overly dramatic, but it was a hard moment for me because I've said this before when talking about Edge, but I was there in the arena when he debuted. I've watched him my entire life. I've been a fan of him my entire life, and then to be in the arena when he has to announce his retirement because of injury, that's a lot of emotion and a lot of, for a guy who was so young and so good at what he did, and don't get me wrong, I am absolutely thrilled with what he's been able to do after his wrestling career. He's been one of those guys who he said he wasn't going to do anything, and he was going to go hide out and become a mountain man and just literally live on a hill with his dogs. And now he's a dad, and he stars on a very popular sci-fi show. And he's really, really made the most of his retirement, and it's awesome to see. But for that time, that's why I had to take it off my list. I did have it on there, but because, it was his last match, and I think it was a more sentimental reason than it was the actual match. Because I remember watching the match and just being so annoyed at the fact that the world championship was up first, and it really was only up first because they wanted to destroy the car and whatever, and then they had all the other stuff planned for the rest of the card where it was Undertaker and Triple H, and where they hit that one move, they would hit one move and then rest for four or five minutes, and hit one move and then rest for 5 minutes. So it was a way to kick off the show and a way to get it going. But it left me I felt a little deflated after it, and probably should have gone on a little bit later. Rob, do you want to add anything to this one?
It was one for me too that was almost on my list because of sentimental reasons. And you know, like I said, like with my number five pick, like that was the only one I allowed for sentiment, because like even Edge himself says that, you know, it wasn't his best match. And you know, like finding out because, you know, with all the injury stuff, like why it didn't go to the limit of what we all came to expect from an Edge match. Like at the time I felt really disappointed by it because I'm still a fan of Del Rio. I think he's an amazingly gifted athlete. But that one just, it didn't quite click. And then, yeah, like going on first like that, not being, you know, the top echelon of matches that you would expect from both of those guys. And then it, you know, just kind of being a straightforward result on it. It didn't make it on my list, but it was a very solid match by two amazing guys. And did that end up being Edge's last match? Period.
Yep. Because he wasn't on any show the next Monday and then the next Friday for SmackDown.
Because he like
and
went
then
to
the
doctor's
Monday.
Like right after that.
Yeah. And then they waited the week to get the results, and the following Monday was when he came back, and it was at Bridgeport or somewhere, and he came out, and it was weird because they showed him backstage talking to people and like saying goodbye and giving hugs, and everybody's like, "What the hell's going on?" And he comes out to the ring and gives his emotional speech. But it was weird too because they did all of that, and then when they went off camera and went off Raw, they had Cena and Orton were in the ring, and they both tried to pay tribute to him and just say a few kind words about him, which was fantastic. But then they went over to SmackDown and did the whole like Edge theme show. And honestly, I liked what they did on Raw a little bit better. It felt a little bit more intimate. It felt a little bit more real. But he really was able to go out with a bang. And especially, his last match was he retained the World Heavyweight Championship at a WrestleMania. I mean, for a kid who grew up as a wrestling fan, you can't get higher than that. That's unbelievable. But again, like I said, this was a very good match in general. For the two people that were wrestling it, it could have been a lot better, I think.
Yeah, like the year before, wasn't that against Chris Jericho, which they tore the house down, I felt, on that one. He had nothing left to prove. He does not look back on his career with any regret at all. He's told me as much. It's not one of those with Eddie Guerrero, his match with Rey Mysterio, I would have normally put on the list just because of the quality of those two performers, but both of them said that they didn't feel like they put on a good match. And by the standard of both of those guys, it was not anywhere close to one of their best matches. Same thing there, it was two very skilled guys. One, the historical context of the match that made it important in that way. But as far as setting the tone for the show and for the entertainment factor, it didn't make it on the list.
Yeah, well, I'm going to jump. I'm going to take over and jump into my number two, because I did give my number one, correct? I am multitasking, but I'm multitasking trying to get guests for our show. I'll jump into my number two, which might seem like a weird entry, but it does kind of relate to my entry at number three. But it's the WrestleMania 4 Battle Royal that took place where it's just whoever won got a big-ass trophy. And what really stood out for me, it was just a regular Battle Royal. It was a Battle Royal, and Battle Royals are always fun, and there's weird guys coming in, eliminating different people, and it was interesting to watch, and it was a good way to kick off a show, especially WrestleMania 4, which was going to be the rest of the night, was going to be tournament matches. So these were all the guys who were not going to be in the tournament. So you got to see the people who you weren't going to be able to see during the WWF Championship tournament. And what stood out was the fact that Bret Hart didn't win the Rumble or didn't win the Battle Royal. He lost to oh my God, I almost said Bad News Barry, dear God. He lost to Bad News Brown, and it was because Bad News Brown turned on him, and then afterward, Bret Hart came in and turned on Bad News Brown, smashing his trophy, and essentially turning babyface for the next 20-some-odd years. From that point forward, Bret Hart was a babyface until... you can argue until he retired, because he just really, even during the end of his career, he was a big face in Canada. He did that. He played that back and forth very nicely. So it really did cement him as a fan favorite, and then started what was going to be the Bret Hart phenomenon for the next 20-some-odd years. And I think that's why it really made it made my list. It probably would have been my number three thinking back on it, but it's at least in my top three because of the historical significance of it and the fact that Federer is always fun to catch up on. And when you're watching that one, there are so many characters and so many guys running around. It was really fun to watch. And it was a really inventive finish, too, especially for the time. You didn't really see a turn coming at the very beginning of a WrestleMania. That just doesn't happen. But, Rob, do you have anything to add to that one?
That was a fun one. And I think out of all of the opening Battle Royal or just, you know, get the guys on the cards and then get their WrestleMania check matches, I think that was definitely one of the better ones. Let's see, it was Bad News Allen worked with Brett up in Stampede, right? So, like, they already had, like, a rapport and knew how to work with each other pretty well. I remember there was a funny comment from Bob Uecker on commentary about it, like the guys that got eliminated within like 20 seconds or something. He's like, mm-hmm. Hey, those guys get paid the same, right, McMahon? And like Vince just like no sold that, you know, like we don't acknowledge that, Bob.
No. It was like, that's a big paycheck, okay. Whether you're in there for 10 seconds or you're in there for 10 minutes.
No, that match made my honorable mentions just for the fact that you brought Battle Royal, Royal Rumble type situation automatically going to make me a sucker. So, I thought it was just a quality match. And like you said, the fact that we actually got like a character turn out of it was also a nice way to just kick off WrestleMania.
Yeah, and let's stay on that, and we'll jump to your number two, Cam, and get you in there.
I've been going back and forth, but I think I'm just going to go with this one just simply because I think someone else is going to use this one as their number two or number one. Between WrestleMania 12, Camp Cornette, Vader, Owen Hart, and the British Bulldog defeated Yokozuna, Jake Snake Roberts, and Ahmed Johnson. I simply put this in there just because I'm a huge Jim Cornette fan. I'm a Jim Cornette guy, if you want to call it that. And I think just one of those great, the WWE has a really recent good track record of six-man tag matches, and I think that was an excellent six-man tag match.
Wow, that was a random one that I saw on my list of opening ones, and I was just like, yeah, there are players in there, but I would not put, I just remember the build-up of that. If Yokozuna's team won, that he'd get 15 minutes or something like that with Cornette in the ring, and him bonsai dropping a stuffed dummy that had Cornette's face painted on a balloon, and I don't know. It just kind of took it away from me. Justin?
I definitely, like you said, six-man tags are a big star collection, I guess you want to say, in there. You know, you look back, and I actually think I tweeted something about this last night with the network. I've been going back and looking at old stuff, and it's just, to me, you look back at some of this stuff, and it's so criminal that somebody like Vader was so misused when he came to the WWF. He should have been given, like, this is almost not this spot, but maybe you say down the line, this is kind of a spot where he should have been given, Vader, somebody that should have been given a world title at some point, if it wasn't for, you know, at the time, crazy, whiny, out of his mind, Shawn Michaels not wanting to drop the title to Vader. But that's a different story. But like you said, he has a good collection of stars. He's got Jake Roberts, Ahmed Johnson, who was still over at the time. So it's a nice collection of guys to put together an opening match, or recognizable names that fans would be into. So, you know, it's a choice.
And Rob?
That was another one of those of, like, yeah, amazing talent in there. But you could tell it was just kind of thrown together. And then there's like this, you know, sometimes it's like it's totally unrelated, but you get a notion for like half of a joke in the back of your head, and that's all that like you can experience during the match. So like I just kept picturing Cornette and Yoko in like 7 minutes in heaven, you know, like in a closet at a makeout party together. And like I couldn't get past it once that popped in my head. It's like, oh, I want my 15 minutes with him.
I can see why you couldn't get past that. That would be a rather disturbing image to get past.
Right? That's all you're going to see now. That's all you're going to see every time you watch that match.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. I don't do other WrestleMania
Looking
John
out for
often,
you guys.
But, great. Rob, let's get to your number two.
See, mine was Cena and Cho from 20. That was the match for me where John Cena arrived. And, you know, I thought it was, the match was what it was, but it was told well and done well in the ring. And then, yeah, like Cena's FU to the Big Show was just such an epic moment. And then, like, yeah, not only did it, like, set the tone for what I still feel personally was the best WrestleMania, but it kind of created the whole Cena thing there.
Yeah, I finally found somebody who agrees with me as far as WrestleMania goes. I was at that WrestleMania, and it was, well, before last year, it was the only WrestleMania I had been to, and, one, it's kind of hard to say that because the main event has been erased pretty much, but I still think that their main event is one of the top three, probably the top main event in WrestleMania history, maybe only compared to Undertaker and Shawn, their retirement match. But even that, I think their first match was better than their second one, and that triple threat match I think was fantastic. And John Cena, like you said, John Cena was at that point in his career where he was over everywhere. There was nothing he can do that got him booed. He was extremely over, and it was the first time we got to see him actually display the fact that he can hit the FU on the Big Show, and the Garden went insane when that happened, and him winning the U.S. title was a great way to kick off the show, and for a show that had two 16 matches for the tag team titles, and then a cruiserweight open on top of it. It was a rough show as far as getting people onto the card, but. Yeah, that was a great one-on-one, straight up, two guys who don't like each other, and one emerging star, one fading star, and they made it work, and it worked well. That place went crazy when Cena got the three count. Justin?
Oh, yeah. The WrestleMania party that my friends and I were having, like, the rest of the night we were talking about it. You know, like, I was into the whole, you know, Dr. Thugonomics thing a lot. Like, I thought that was just such a fun character that he was doing. And it was, like, around that time where I was, like, you know, both him and Orton, you know, like, I kept telling everyone that would listen, like, these two guys are going to be the guys. Like, they're going to be at the top of all the cards. And people were like, yeah, the Marky Mark guy, whatever. For once in my life, I was right.
You're right. I'm sure a lot of people didn't want you to be right, but you were right. Justin, do you have anything to add to that one?
I think it's one of the signs, like you said, where I've had my problems with Big Show and how he's been used recently, but this is the perfect use for somebody like a guy like Big Show in this match, where you have somebody, a veteran wrestler established at, you know, from his time in WCW up until now in WWE, and here's this new young John Cena coming out. And like, I really like to think of WrestleMania 21 when he finally wins the world title is when he arrived. No, this is kind of where it happened here, where he arrived, he got you to Big Show, and I think nobody would have had a problem with John Cena being the top guy that he is now if he would have stuck with this. But unfortunately, you know, the WWE kind of changed directions with their, you know, creative and going more PG, and they turned it into what he is today. I think if this John Cena was still, this character was still around nowadays, I don't think you'd have nearly as many male adults my age in their 20s and the early 30s booing somebody like John Cena's character now. I think if he was still rapping and talking trash to people, he would easily not be worried about that many people bringing him. Because you got a good bring in the ring. No matter how much I dislike his character, I'll always say that this guy steps up in big matches. Just look at his match with Cesaro a couple weeks ago on Raw. So there's no doubt he can bring it in the ring, but it's just the character that doesn't work. But, you know, at this time, the only bad thing that came from this is that god-awful, ugly, spinning United States Championship. But other than that, you know, it's a good start making a performance for Cena.
Yeah, I can see, absolutely see where you're coming from. Cam, your 2 cents?
Yeah, nothing else. No one really chimed on. Like you said, it was kind of like the this is John Cena's moment. I guess that he's going to be a major player, even though I think at that point he kind of already was. Like you said, he was over basically everywhere. He was fresh for at the time, and he's set the stage to where he is now, I guess.
Yeah, and what can you say? I mean, it was if you go back and watch it now, it was a classic John Cena match, but back then it was fresh and it was new. So people, it was a different reception, and people went for it. And I don't know if we mentioned this at the top of the show, but we're getting into our number ones right now, and I just wanted to let everybody know that we eliminated Bret Hart versus Owen Hart as an option because we figured everybody was going to put them at number one. So that's just kind of in another league of itself, and that match is in its own bubble, and we're working off every other one. So if you're wondering why we haven't spoken about that one at all, that's why. With that being said, Cam, let's jump right into your number one, and let's get into the meat of what WrestleMania is supposed to be.
I guess since I get to be number one, I'm going to take, which I'm assuming is everyone's 1B. My favorite Rey Mysterio match comes from WrestleMania 21, Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero. I think that match, I mean, from a match point was great, from storytelling point was even better. And like I said, it's my favorite Rey Mysterio match. I'm not the biggest Rey Mysterio fan, but I could find a lot right with that whole story there, and that's my number one.
I know one person will disagree with you, which is Rob, because he bashed it earlier on when you weren't paying attention. But Rob, go right ahead and repeat what you said.
Sean, I know, like, you guys are going to, like, talk privately, like, man, Rob was a douche on this episode. He just crapped on all of our picks. but yeah, that's the awesome thing for me about wrestling is that it's so subjective, and like one person's favorite match on a card, another person may not care for, and vice versa. Yeah, storyline wise, it was great. Was that the whole Dominic thing? Am I remembering that right?
It was right before they were tag team champions going into the match, I believe,
okay.
Or I just
okay.
something like that.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, and everyone knows that those two guys were just so born to work with each other. Not only were both of them born to be professional wrestlers and to go down as, you know, the best of what they did. I think that they had better matches together. And, you know, like, you know, Eddie, you know, apologized to Ray after the match for it not being what the two of them knew that they were capable of. But yeah, I think like a big problem that Ray talked about was that his mask came undone. So he wasn't able to do a lot of the spots that they had planned out because his mask kept turning on him, you know, making
it a safety
hazard.
It was before he understood what Velcro was, and he still had that old school tie behind his mask.
But yeah, I mean, it's too, like I while we've been talking, I've also been multitasking, working on my Eddie Guerrero Champions Collection portrait. So I've got a 3-foot by 4-foot painting of Eddie staring at me here, talking about this. The irony's not lost
on me.
You're
crapping all over his match. That's always good.
Yeah. Just echoing what he said. But it's two amazing guys, and like one of the things that bugs me, like currently, with fan reactions is how they're reacting to Rey Mysterio's return. Is he the Rey Mysterio that debuted in ECW against Psicosis? No. Is he still the innovator of so much and probably going to go down as the best high flyer ever, which I don't even know how anyone would beat what he does? Yes. And then Eddie Guerrero as an all-around performer on everything that he did, I always felt was absolutely perfect. But, yeah, unfortunately, I just can't say that this is my number one match.
Yeah, understandable. Let's get Justin's two cents on this one.
Well, I agree that they may have had better matches at some point down the line. You know, they never faced off again in the WrestleMania opening match. So I guess kind of to defend Cam, the theme of the show, when you look at top WrestleMania opening matches, when you look back at everything else, is what I can definitely see putting up there. For me, it just wasn't my personal preference. You know, I've had other choices here that I was going to pick from. But, you know, I definitely see Cam's opinion. There were some, spots here and there that you're going to miss, but obviously those happen in wrestling matches. And I think what took away from me was kind of what Rob mentioned, is Rey Mysterio fits in his match the whole time. But, you know, as far as opening WrestleMania matches go, I could definitely see this being a top on somebody's list if that's the kind of match they prefer, like Cam did.
Yeah, and I have to agree to it. It obviously wasn't one of their better matches. Personally, I think probably their best match was their Halloween Havoc match many years before. But that's besides the point. We're talking opening WrestleMania matches. So and that was an opening WrestleMania match, and it was a big WrestleMania too. The one that saw the emergence of not only John Cena as the WWE champion, but Batista as the World Heavyweight Championship. So it was a big pay-per-view, and they're the two that kicked it off. I think that one really started the trend of trying to get a high-profile or big-name guys in the opening bout. But let's go back to you, Justin, and get your number one.
For my number one, I am going to go back to WrestleMania 25 and choose the Money in the Bank ladder match that show. It was good collection of guys in there. You had CM Punk, MVP, Shelton Benjamin, Kane, Mark Henry, Christian, Finlay, and Kofi Kingston. Anytime you put Shelton Benjamin in a ladder match like that, he's going to do something crazy. And this is the one where he did his high dive off the top of the ladder onto everybody at the bottom. This match also included the Hornswoggle jumping on all eight guys, and somehow the strength of Hornswoggle coming off the rope knocked all eight of those guys down at once. But, you know, it was a good collection of guys. It was Kofi Kingston's first Money in the Bank ladder match. Obviously, we know what was to come with him with these types of matches later on down the line. It's, again, one of those matches where, like I said earlier, you want to get the crowd into it with what you're doing in your opening match. And what better way to have an opening match get you into it than have a bunch of guys using ladders as weapons and doing high spots off ladders and all of those other kind of unique moves that you can do with them. I chose this one over WrestleMania 23 for the simple fact of that this one's winner actually went on to cash in the briefcase, whereas WrestleMania 23's winner, Mr. Kennedy, ended up losing his to Edge and then getting suspended and then pretty much never seen or heard from on WWE TV again after that, if I'm not mistaken. I think he came back for 1 week after and then was gone. But like I said, besides the point, it was a good mixture of guys, like I said, putting together. This one was kind of the first one that introduced like the bigger guys like Kane and Mark Henry being a part of the match. And then you just had somebody, you had solid ring veterans like Christian and Finlay, who you can pretty much tell them to have any kind of match and they don't know what to do in there. So it's a good collection of younger and older talent mixed with some big guys that we really weren't used to seeing in ladder matches at the time. So like I said, perfect way to get the crowd into it with the high spot acrobatic contest.
Yeah, and let's jump over to you, Rob.
I really enjoyed that one a lot. I liked what was said there about adding the two big men in there. Like, no one was expecting Mark Henry to do a spear off the top of the ladder or anything, you know, but the idea of having those big guys in the match, like, shook things up a little bit on, you know, how it was put together and the kind of things that could be done in there, which I at first didn't appreciate, but, you know, later on, like, really grew to like what they tried to do there. And, yeah, like, it was an amazing mix of talent in there. The other night, the wife and I watched the Money in the Bank from 24, which, you know, was just, like, such an amazing mix of guys as well. A lot of similar participants in the match. Yeah, like, my big thing is I miss having the Money in the Bank match at WrestleMania. I thought that was a really good spectacle to be part of WrestleMania. Like, I understand why they gave it its own show, because it is that good of a concept. I miss having it at the big show.
Yep, I can understand that. Just it's one of those it was one of those matches where you had all the right elements put in there, and not only did the winner go on to win the championship, the winner went on to become one of the bigger stars of our generation. So it set the tone of it being a star-making type of match, and it kind of has retained that moniker, except for maybe the Jack Swagger win, which came out of nowhere and went nowhere on top of it. Besides that, let's go on to Rob. I'll go last, and let's get Rob. Let's get your number one for the top three opening WrestleMania matches.
This is probably my setting myself up after crapping all over everyone else's pick throughout the show. I picked the very first one, Masked Executioner against Tito Santana. Masked Executioner, I believe, was Buddy Rose under the hood there.
I'm trying to think if it was Buddy Rose or Adrian Dallas. I think
it was Buddy Rose was what I read.
Yeah.
Which, you know, like, that was a guy that, you know, went on to, you know, help bring up a lot of talent, including Shawn Michaels. I thought it was a very solid match. It wasn't anything spectacular, but the historical importance of it being the very first WrestleMania match, period. It not only set the tone for that show, but set the tone for the annual events going forward. You know, I thought that, like, they had, like, you know, a couple quick little promos beforehand of, you know, like, Executioner saying, like, I'm going to be going after your leg, and that's all I'm going to be doing. And then, you know, like, didn't deliver on any of that. And it built up, you know, Santana as being such a skilled guy. Like, one, he knew this is what that guy's targeting, and two, through the storytelling that they did in the ring, you know, prevented him from doing that and then went on to get the win. I thought it was just a good classic old school booking, and you know, just set the tone for the show. And, like, yeah, Santana, like, it dream match for that one would have been Santana against Steamboat instead, maybe. I think that they really would have torn the house down, but maybe, like, too much, you know? I think that was still a very good match.
So I could understand putting that match as number one simply because it was the first one. It was the match that started the revolution. It was the match that started one of the biggest shows that this form of entertainment had ever seen. And it was a big, big deal. And the fact that it was Tito Santana has always can always say that he won the very first match at WrestleMania. it's a big deal. It's something that you can't duplicate, and it's a nice little thing to have on your resume. And I'm sure that he agrees and is very happy that, even though it seemed like it could have been a little bit thrown together, it's still something that's going to go down in history forever as being one of the very first match at WrestleMania, which we're going into WrestleMania 30 now. It's just incredible. Justin?
And, you know, I think that they could have thrown in, you know, maybe Steamboat against Matt Bourne for the first match as well, and that would have, you know, definitely been even more legit for my number one pick. But, you know, think if they had put on David San Martino against Brutus Beefcake and booked the same way with the double disqualification, what kind of tone would that have set for the whole spectacle going forward, right? You would have started off with, that crappy taste in your mouth. This one, it was a good palate starter, you know, it was a good appetizer.
Yeah, I fully agree. Justin, do you have anything to add to that?
Like I said, you kind of said that, in-ring-wise, it's just a quick 4 or 5 minute match. But obviously, from the historical perspective of it, you just have, the first match ever in WrestleMania history, obviously, is something that you're probably going to remember as a wrestling fan. You know, like you said, maybe you would have even done something like Tito Santana against maybe even Greg Valentine if they wanted to keep adding on to storylines from that point, if I remember correctly. Like you said, that's what the Executioner was talking about during his really bad pre-match promo that was actually on one of the things on the network the other day that they were live streaming. And I was watching about the first hour of it. Man, that was just a really, really not that great promo from the Executioner. Like you said, just the way his delivery on it was just weird. But there was something also that I missed in wrestling. We were seeing pre-match interviews like that with the guys talking about, what they're going to do and what they're going to do going into the match. It's just something you kind of wish you actually see a little bit more. But like you said, a historical perspective, absolutely, I can see why this would be on the list.
And Cam?
No, I don't know. You guys pretty much touched on everything. I looked at it. The first thing I watched was WrestleMania 1. It was a pretty good match, in my opinion. I was a Cito Santana fan, so you never go wrong with him opening up a show.
I think going into it, and I believe on one of the WrestleMania DVDs, Vince McMahon might have made a mention. He was just like, we had to put the best guys that were going to be in the ring first, and one of those guys is Tito Santana. So that's who they put in the ring, and they just needed an opponent for him. It's an interesting dynamic to think that going back and looking at how big WrestleMania has become, that it started out between a guy who's almost a veteran at that point, even so, in Tito Santana, against a guy who lost to everybody on every edition of Superstars that you watched. But yet that was still the very first match of WrestleMania, and it's interesting to think that, and it's a nice little piece of trivia that I think a lot of wrestling fans remember, and a lot of wrestling fans not only remember but remember fondly, in the idea that these two were kind of no names, but were still able to go out there and have a very good match, and a match that I think that it lived up to what that show actually turned out to be. It wasn't the greatest WrestleMania of all time, but it was the first, and there's a lot to be said about that. Okay, I'll go into my number one. I will honestly say that a lot of what you guys have said have been part of my number one list. So there's a lot of different things that have already been said and have already been talked about. So I'm going to put it just one that I think deserves to be in there. And I was gonna go with what you said, Rob, with the Shield match last year, just as a great kickoff match. But I'm gonna have to go with WrestleMania 17, which largely considered one of the best WrestleManias of all time. And it opened up with Chris Jericho versus William Regal for the Intercontinental Championship. And although they only got 7 minutes, you got to see two guys who, this was the very first show after WWE bought out WCW, and two guys who worked in WCW at the same time, ran pretty much at the same level throughout the same time, and both left the sinking ship before it actually sank, and were able to come together and for the Intercontinental Championship and put on a great 7 minute technical wrestling. I mean, there was high flying from Jericho. There was the classic villainous with the brass knuckles with William Regal. And there was just a lot going on in that match that I thought really set the tone of what was going to be a great pay-per-view, even though the next match, which was Taz and the APA versus Wright Spencer, kind of killed everything. But if you look down the rest of the card, the rest of the card was fantastic. So I think this really did, it was a really good kickoff match, and it only barely beat out the other match that I was thinking of, and that was Rey Mysterio versus Matt Hardy at WrestleMania 19 for the Cruiserweight title, which opened a lot of people's eyes to the talent of Matt Hardy. And showed Rey Mysterio probably in his prime. It was before all the injuries and before everything that is really holding him back now. And they put on a great show as well. But I have to go with the classic technician style wrestling in the Chris Jericho and William Regal match. Rob, do you comment on that one?
I need to watch that again. I'm going to cop to 100% transparency here that I have not watched all the matches in the time period that I've allotted for myself. I probably would have rated that one higher myself. Those are two of my all-time favorites. You know, like I was saying about Eddie Guerrero, that he was just all around perfect at everything he did. I count Chris Jericho the same way, and especially at that time period. And then also William Regal is, like say you just started drinking wine and, you know, like something sweeter is the wine that tastes good to you. But then over time you develop your palate and, you know, you mature it and you discover, you know, like, you know, some sort of Merlot or something that really works well for you. That's how I view William Regal. At the time, I was, you know, just more of a casual wrestling fan, you know, like a guy that watched Raw and SmackDown, and that was about it. I didn't appreciate fully what William Regal was doing at that time, like I do now. There was so much that was understated with how he worked, and, you know, especially because of the background in British wrestling, which I was so foreign to me at that time. And then also, you know, all the training that he got, you know, throughout Europe and then, you know, in WCW. It's interesting because, you know, he was a journeyman in the same way that Jericho was, just a little bit earlier in the process and different parts of the world. But, yeah, those are two guys that people within the business acknowledge as the greats. So, I can easily see that being a top-rated match.
Yeah, for me, it's funny because I've been a fan of William Regal since WCW days and him having the Blue Bloods with Bobby Eaton. At first, it was with Triple H or Jean-Paul Levesque, and then eventually with Bobby Eaton, and then having his tag title runs and having his television title runs and all that, and then showing up on WWE TV and instantly becoming a comedy character. And it was weird because here's this guy who is so proficient in the ring and so fluid with everything he did, and automatically he was I mean, I think the main storyline that set off this feud was the fact that Chris Jericho peed in his tea because he was the general manager. So, I mean, since that was the basis of this match, it really was a change of pace for these two. But I don't know. I have to say that it was a very, very nice surprise, especially, like you said, it wasn't the prime of Regal's career, but he definitely was still going strong. And, I mean, you throw him in the ring today, he had a fantastic match with Antonio Cesaro a couple months ago on NXT. The man, he is just unbelievable. He can still do everything that's asked of him. Justin, you have
and what he's doing with the kids and
okay.
Sorry, I was going to say what he's doing with the kids in developmental is amazing. And I've got several friends that are there, and they just all speak so incredibly highly of him. And what they're able to learn from him. It's a real asset to have him there.
Yeah, I think William Regal is really one of those gems that you know you have him, and you kind of, I don't want to say you just take advantage of the fact that he's working for you, but he's the guy that it can always be called upon, and people should seek out his knowledge a little bit more than probably they do because of his history and because of how he grew up in business and what he had to go through in order to make it to where he is today is just phenomenal. Justin, did you have anything to add to that match?
Just to say, like, if you said you had two guys that are, you have Chris Jericho and William Regal, and you told somebody they were fighting, if they got 7 minutes, I think I would feel pretty confident in saying that they are going to put on a good match, whether you give them 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 20 minutes, a half an hour, especially, like you said, at that time, Chris Jericho had just left WCW. He wasn't as hot as he was when he first debuted, but he had established himself as a great in-ring worker. And then you have William Regal, who at that time had been in business for over 10 years. He knows what he's doing out there. And you just put those guys out there to start the show, like you said. I guess no matter what time frame that you give them, they are going to go out there and have a good match. And just to add to the multitasking really quick, if you were worried about watching WrestleMania, the stream for NXT on the network pretty much just crashed for everybody watching it. So it looks like we might still have some more bugs to work out there before we get to WrestleMania.
I love it. Before we get off to whatever, Cam, did you have anything to add to that last one?
No, I was just going to say that I was going to note that William Regal actually lost the opening match of WrestleMania 17 and 18. It was both for the Intercontinental title, which I thought was just kind of a weird fact that he was never used properly, but I just thought it was weird that he lost in the opening match just for the same title 2 years in a row.
Yeah, the first time he lost the title, the second year he lost the opportunity. But what's also funny is the following, after the Chris Jericho William Regal match, the next year was Chris Jericho came in as the undisputed world champion. So 1 year he's wrestling William Regal, and the next year he's the undisputed champion against Triple H. I mean, that's not a bad year to go through for 365 days. So that's a pretty big career jump. Anyway, that rounds up our top three. Does anybody have any honorable mentions, Justin? Or I know Rob threw in his other two top five. Justin, do you have any others?
No, actually, the Rob's two that he mentioned were probably my only other two honorable mentions. I was really tempted to put the JBL Finley brawl on my number three, but I just ended up going with the Rockers instead. But that match was just, you know, like it's kind of almost similar to Jericho and Regal, just two veterans going out there and putting on a nice, fun little brawl. I watched that this morning. Those guys worked probably a little bit stiff with each other just because they knew that they currently knew what they were doing the whole time. Then you had the added element of JBL throwing a garbage can at Hornswoggle on ringside, which is just funny to watch the visual of. But that one probably was probably my 3B, and I would have no problem you know, switching that out with the one I put at number three, just because I think those two work so well together, having so much knowledge from their years spent in the wrestling business.
Yeah, and Cam?
No, I had wrote down eight of them, and we covered all eight, so no other honorable mentions for this one.
Okay, well, that is our top threes for the opening, the best opening matches in WrestleMania history. Obviously, there's a lot, and we did not double up on any of them, so we covered a good amount, and that's pretty good for us. Usually, we're fighting over who wants to choose which one, but I think we were able to spread it out pretty much across. Earliest one was number one, but we kind of kicked off from WrestleMania 8 on, and WrestleMania 4 was in there. So it was a good mix. I'm pretty happy with our list that we have going on here. Before we start off, Rob, I just wanted to get back to you and give us some things that you have coming up. I know you said you're working on Eddie Guerrero right now, your champion's portrait. What are some of the things that are going on for you right now that we can look forward to in the next coming month, especially leading up to WrestleMania? And I know, are you going to be a part of WrestleCon again this year, or is WWE bringing you into access?
All that I can say right now is that I will be in New Orleans that week. the reason why is forthcoming, but it may involve a wrestling company that operates around the world in an entertaining fashion. but I'll definitely be there, and I think maybe like next week the announcement's coming on what's happening there, but it's really cool, and I wish I could talk about with you guys right now. Something neat, though. A couple neat things. Well, I'll also be at Jim Ross's show that Thursday night. In New Orleans, we're going to be doing like a co-signing together because he's going to have two or three prints of paintings I've done of him at his shows. That's his merchandise that he's bringing to all of his shows is prints of my paintings.
Excellent.
Pretty neat. Jim's been just such an amazing guy. Next month here in Kansas City is the big Planet Comic Con. I'll have a table set up there. Has some show exclusive prints and getting a lot of weird looks from all the people because I think I'm going to be the only wrestling guy there. But hey, that means no competition, right? Everyone else is
exactly.
There for the Star Trek reunion. I'm sure we'll make some wrestling fans by the end of the weekend. A lot coming up with WWE leading into WrestleMania. Every Tuesday, we're launching three new items on auction. Will all be matted, so they're frame ready, and then the mats are signed by the subjects of the paintings. And there's some ones I'm pretty excited about coming up. Like I don't know if you saw the Randy Orton one where he's kind of emerging out of the St. Louis skyline.
Yep.
That's going to be coming up like closer to WrestleMania, which I think is if we were going to do a top five list of paintings Rob has done, because I need more, you know, for my ego. I think that's in my top five paintings. I'm excited for that. Unfortunately, that was the weekend that John Cena got that eye injury, so I didn't get a chance to meet him or to get the stuff signed of him for that, but. There's something going on in New Orleans in April where we might get that taken care of. Anyone wants to follow me on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, on Twitter and Instagram, it's at Rob Schamberger, RobSchamberger. And I put up new paintings every day. That's one of my things is I put a new painting up every single day. You'll see what I'm going to put up next. I can give you guys a scoop for the rest of the week, what's going to be coming up. We got Jerry Lawler coming up tomorrow. new Jim Ross one on Saturday to coincide with his show starting in New York. Fandango on Sunday, and a real big piece that I did of Andre the Giant that's going up on Monday. And the videos that I put up on YouTube, you'll get to see how I did that Andre one on Monday. I'm pretty excited about that.
Oh, excellent.
Otherwise, it's things to do with me painting wrestlers, I guess.
Yeah, there's only so much that you can talk about. I paint wrestlers. So, that's about it.
I'll get home. I'll get home from the studio. My wife will be like, "So, how was your day?" I'm like, "Oh, I painted wrestlers."
Yep, and that's pretty much what I did. But again, thank you again for being on. You're one of our top guys that we contact first to get onto our show, just because we love having you on, and it's always interesting having a different perspective on the wrestling business, and especially now that you're in the inside now, you can provide us with a little bit of a scoop here and there, so that's fun to talk about as well. But it's always great to talk to you, Robin, and I'm glad to have you kick off our WrestleMania month leading up into the big show, WrestleMania 30 down in New Orleans, and unfortunately, we won't be able to join you for whatever you're going to be doing down there. But best of luck going down, and hopefully you have a better trip than you had to New York last year.
Yeah, hopefully I don't get T-boned by any semis this year.
Yeah, I think that'd be kind of hard in the jet, but yeah.
Yeah. And sorry again to Justin and Cam for crapping all over your choices. They were great choices, and I was wrong. There you go.
Stop apologizing. All you basically did was take over my job for the week. That's all it was. thank you again. And for Justin, Cam, and Rob, I am Matt Harris for the Inside Pulse Wrestling Postcast. Oh, and to throw out a plug, next week, as of right now, it is tentatively going to be the top three WrestleMania-only themed attires. Think guys like Triple H or guys like Rey Mysterio. People who have only worn a certain ring gear or certain outfit down to the ring at that WrestleMania and ever again. That's supposed to be our topic for next week. Our special guest is penciled in right now as being Jill Thompson. So I'm going to get in touch with her to get her confirmed for next week. But until that time, I'm guessing she's going to be on. Who knows? I'm sure we'll find out later in the week. But until next Thursday, again, I am Matt Harris for the Wrestling Postcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Thursday.